This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Tree Road near Lake Bonham. Why did she leave her car behind? And where did she go? From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, Season 2, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris, Episode 2, Missing. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Thanks for listening. It's now Monday, May 13th, 2002, and Jennifer Harris has not returned home to her grandmother's house in Bonham, Texas. When she'd left the night before, around 6 p.m., Jennifer's grandmother recalled her saying she was going to visit her friend, Christy Farr. But now, she was doubting she'd heard correctly.
She thought she was having a little bit hard time with her hearing.
This is Jennifer's younger sister, Alyssa.
She thought maybe she was going back to Frisco to pick up some more of her things or something, or to do something with the business. So it didn't phase my grandmother that, you know, she wasn't there the next day.
Jennifer had recently moved from Frisco, Texas, back to her hometown of Bonham. The two towns are only about an hour apart, so it would have made sense for Jennifer to drive there. Frisco hadn't quite worked out for Jennifer. In February 2002, just 3 months prior, she and her boyfriend, James Hamilton, had closed their jointly owned massage and wellness center due to financial hardship. And Jennifer had also ended things romantically. Despite her passion for bigger city living, Jennifer surprised everyone by moving back to Bonham and into her grandmother's house. But Jennifer didn't make the move alone. Her trusted companion, a black lab named Pat, had made the journey with her. Jennifer and Rob had gotten Pat together back when they were in college, a year prior to their marriage. Jennifer considered the dog to be their baby and had won custody of Pat in the divorce.
Well, I said, you know, well, did she take Patton with her, the dog? And Mimi said, no, Patton's here.
Mimi is what the girls called their grandmother.
So I think that was another reason that Mimi wasn't worried at the time, was because, I mean, she would never leave that dog, like, you know, for anything. If she was even just going for a ride around, she would take her with her. So if she were ever, you know, meant to like go on a camping trip or go meet up with people and stay somewhere or something, that she would definitely have taken her.
Yeah, that's interesting. If you're a dog lover, you don't go far without your dog.
Yeah, it was her baby. I mean, really.
Alyssa didn't know it at the time, but Jennifer might have been distracted by another baby in her life. Leading up to that fateful Mother's Day, Jennifer had told multiple people that she was pregnant and that she believed the father was her ex-husband, Rob Holman.
And so she came over and then told me, you're not going to believe, you know, the mess I'm in.
This is one of Jennifer's best friends, Jill Wagner, in a 2002 police interview.
And so then, you know, she told me that it was Rob's, and I was kind of shocked.
And you know Rob as, how would you identify Rob?
Rob is her ex-husband.
Her ex-husband, okay.
But Jennifer kept the news of her pregnancy a secret from her sister, Alyssa.
She kept some things private from me. I don't know if she just thought I would, you know, judge her. I do feel like she was always also a big sister, and she didn't want for me to think badly of her or to like worry about her.
In hindsight, Alyssa did notice some clues about her sister's pregnancy when she visited Austin the previous weekend.
I did pick up red flags. She was hungry all the time. And I remember she was like, oh, there's a bagel place. Can I have a bagel? Oh, I want a snack. Let's go get a sandwich. So I'm like, we just ate. And it just seemed like she was just really hungry a lot. And I thought that was odd too. Then she would feel, she'd say, I just don't feel so great. And a little nauseous or something. And I'm like, well, maybe it's because you're eating so much. I don't know. But I've had three kids, so I can look back at it now and be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe she was pregnant at like early stages or something, because I know all those symptoms. But at the time, I wasn't thinking that was even a possibility.
Jennifer had finalized her divorce from Rob 2 years earlier in October 2000 and had only recently broken things off with James Hamilton. But Jennifer and Rob had never truly called it quits. They had been seeing each other romantically throughout her relationship with James, which Rob admitted.
We'd see each other about every 2 weeks.
And while Rob kept their relationship from his new live-in girlfriend, Sarah Beth Ruffner, Jennifer shared her secret with the two people closest to her, her cousin Susan and her good friend Jill. So when Jennifer had been a bit cagey about where she was going the previous night and hadn't returned home the next morning, her friends and family weren't immediately alarmed.
I told Alyssa, I said, she's probably with Rob. And Alyssa said, you know, probably so.
Those who had known her all her life also knew it was not unlike Jennifer to be out of touch for a period of time. She'd let her cell phone bill lapse and was sometimes hard to reach. Between that and her knowledge of Jennifer's affair, Susan was initially unconcerned about Jennifer's whereabouts. James Hamilton, however, was concerned. As Jennifer's recent ex-romantic and business partner, he was in the dark about her past excursions and didn't know about the affair with Rob Holman. Susan had stayed friends with James, despite his breakup with Jennifer.
He called me on Monday night, and he said, I just got a phone call, Jennifer's missing. I told him, I said, James, I said, don't worry about it. And I said, Jennifer's just pulling Jennifer, because a lot of stuff that Jennifer did was like, let me see if I can make someone mad.
The breakup hadn't been a mutual one. Jennifer seemed to harbor some ill feelings toward James, while James remained in love and committed to Jennifer.
She knew how to push James's buttons to be like things that would hurt him or make him jealous. And then she would laugh. But she told James about a month and a half ago, well, I'm going to get me a real cowboy. And I thought, and he said, Susan, who could it be? And he would always be like, is she seeing someone up there? What's going on? Why does she always want me to stay down here? Well, I knew what she was doing. But Jennifer had made the comment, what if I just disappear? She had said it to James, and James was freaking out because he was scared that she would just run away and not tell him because he was still in love with her. I said, she'll be back. And he said, no, Susan, they've turned her in as a missing person.
And indeed, around 6 p.m. on Monday, Jennifer's grandmother, Virginia Acree, made an official missing persons report. This is Daryl Parker, a former lieutenant with the Fannin County Sheriff's Department, reading the Jennifer Harris Offense Report.
Okay, on May 13th, 2002, Virginia Acree contacted Bonham Police Department that her granddaughter, Jennifer Holman, is missing. Acree advised Jennifer was last seen on May 12th, 2002, when she left her friend Christy Farr's house at approximately 8 p.m. Acree advised it was very unusual of Jennifer to disappear without notifying someone.
Note that Jennifer's grandmother still referred to her by Holman, her married name, even though she'd been divorced from Rob for over a year. At this point, even those who knew of Jennifer's propensity to take off for a while began to suspect that this time was different. Here's Jennifer's close friend, Jill Wagner, in a police interview.
Oh, I'm worried. I'm worried that either y'all aren't ever going to find her or you're not going to find something positive at this point. I just think if she was going to take off and be gone, maybe 24 hours would have been the most that she would have, you know, done something like that.
Have you ever known Jennifer to take off?
Well, other than the time when we were little bitty kids and she tried to talk me into running away.
Yeah.
But I can't really see her worrying her grandmother for a week, you know, or, you know, several days that, you know, she, I mean, since she's staying with her grandmother, I just know that even if she decided she was going to take off for a couple of days because she needed a breather and, you know, everybody's driving her nuts and she's used to living by herself or, you know, whatever, I just think she would have said something. before she left. I'm under the impression she probably didn't tell anybody where she was going when she left that night.
The information at this point is simply that Jennifer had left her grandmother's house in the early evening of Sunday, May 12th, to go to her friend, Christy Farr's. She left Christy's shortly before 8 p.m. in a hurried state, saying, "It's almost 8, I have got to go." But she had not disclosed where she was going or why. Just hours after the missing persons report was filed, investigators...
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Would get their first clue about Jennifer's destination. Here again is Jennifer's younger sister, Alyssa.
Yeah, I was after work with friends at a happy hour on a patio in Austin, and I got a phone call that Jennifer's Jeep had been found out on a country road near the lake and had been just abandoned, and they didn't know where she was.
On the evening of Monday, May 13th, two deputies with the Fannin County Sheriff's Department responded to a report of a vehicle blocking the roadway off County Road 2610 behind Lake Bonham. The green Jeep the officers found was locked and appeared to be undisturbed. They considered it a traffic hazard, so instead of simply ticketing the vehicle, they called Pro Auto Towing to remove and secure it. At the time this decision was made, the officers were unaware of Jennifer's missing persons case or that the Jeep they had just towed was, in fact, evidence in a criminal investigation. Here again is Daryl Parker.
If they had known this was a missing person, had that information, what they would have done, they would have just frozen the scene. You know, they wouldn't have just called out a tow truck to tow it off someplace.
This was the beginning of a long line of investigative mistakes and interagency confusion that would dog the Jennifer Harris case for decades.
Once they did realize that she was missing, they went back out to the car, you know, looked through the vehicle, maybe tried to get fingerprints, checked the scene, and then started with her friends and family of who may have seen her.
According to the Fannin County Offense Report about Jennifer's case, on Tuesday, May 14th, deputies went to Pro Auto Towing, where the Jeep was being held, and checked it for clues that might indicate if Jennifer had left her vehicle willingly. The report states that her Jeep was locked, and nothing appeared to be out of place inside the vehicle. The gas tank was full, and there was nothing mechanically wrong. While a small brown makeup bag was found in the rear of the Jeep, Jennifer's purse and keys were notably absent. Two empty water bottles were found in the front passenger side and collected for evidence. Next, authorities contacted Search One Rescue to bring trained dogs to the original scene on County Road 2610, where the Jeep had been abandoned. They were trying to pick up Jennifer's scent. The road where Jennifer's Jeep was parked was a residential area, but there was one nearby business, the Lake Bonham Hoedown, a local music venue known for bluegrass, country, and gospel music. There hadn't been a concert the night that Jennifer went missing, but the bright red building was something of a marker.
Directly across the road from the Hoedown, there's sort of like a wooded area. And so it's possible that Jennifer walked from her car across and into the wooded area. So in an abundance of caution, them bringing out dogs to see if they could track her if she was on foot, you know, that was a reasonable step, but ultimately unsuccessful.
Yeah, according to the report, it says the dogs indicated she did not walk away from her vehicle from what they could tell.
Right, right. Again, too, it had rained that night, so that's going to make it more difficult for those dogs to get a scent.
That's a good point. Yeah. The weather certainly plays an interesting role in this case. And so once the car's been found, they... Don't see, you know, any signs of foul play in the vehicle. They don't see signs of a struggle, anything like that. What are the working theories? Is it possible that she, you know, hitchhiked from that location, or were there other ideas thrown out in those early days?
Well, from an investigative standpoint, you know, you start kind of gaming what might have happened. And one of the things, the first thing is, was the vehicle mechanically sound? You know, did something go wrong with the vehicle? Well, the keys were not found with the vehicle, so they couldn't really start the car to find out. But it didn't appear that the vehicle was disabled. So if the vehicle was not disabled, she left the vehicle. She didn't have, there were no personal belongings left in there, like her purse. That's an intimate personal belonging. She took that with her. So you start thinking about, what are the possible reasons? The first appearance is that she met someone. She parked her car off the roadway, locked her vehicle, and took her intimate personal items with her. That would indicate to an investigator that she met someone that she knows.
One of the questions Jennifer's family had early on about the contents of her Jeep was if the Reckless Kelly CD she had bought in Austin was located. It was not listed by investigators in the Jeep's inventory. In one of the reports about the case, Sheriff's Deputy Rush Smith advised that he spoke with two residents in the area where the Jeep was found. They both told the deputy they remembered seeing the same Jeep parked at the same location in the past. We'll put a pin in this and come back later. Meanwhile, back in Austin, Alyssa was in full panic mode, anxiously wanting answers about where her sister was.
After that happy hour, I rushed home, frantic. I lived in an apartment, and I began calling James Hamilton and saying, "Where's my sister? What have you done with my sister?" And just really frantic and panicking. And he said, "I don't know what you're talking about. Calm down. I haven't seen her. I haven't talked to her. I don't know." And I just got angry and hung up.
Alyssa arrived in Bonham the next day.
I just packed up my things, and it took me a while to get there, but I showed up in Bonham at my grandmother's house on the 14th, which was Tuesday.
Yeah. And, you know, what's going through your mind when you hear that your sister's missing? Do you have any idea of, you know, where she could be, why her car would have been out at the lake?
At first, it dawned on me, maybe she decided to go camping or something, and maybe Mimi didn't remember.
Mimi, remember, is what the girls called their grandmother. It wasn't uncommon for Jennifer to go camping. In fact, Rob's family had a cabin nearby. Susan also brought up the possibility that Jennifer could be hiding out there.
But I told Alyssa, I said, "Has anyone checked the cabin? Could she be down there?"
And since Susan was well aware of their relationship, she thought it could all just be a matter of a secret rendezvous. But Alyssa was not convinced.
The more I thought about where her Jeep was, that was what changed things for me. Because had her Jeep not been found at all, I would have thought she went somewhere, like on a road trip, or she was traveling. It's one thing to go missing and not have a vehicle that's been parked for 24 hours at least. And it's another, you know, to just find something of someone's and say, "Well, where is this person?"
Back on County Road 2610, as sheriff's deputies were still on scene, and no doubt asking themselves who Jennifer could have met at this remote location, their first suspect walked right into view. According to the report, Jennifer's ex-boyfriend, James Hamilton, showed up at the scene while law enforcement was still processing it. Lieutenant Mike McClellan asked James to join him at the sheriff's office for an interview, and he obliged. He claimed he had nothing to do with Jennifer's disappearance, and that he showed up because he was concerned about her well-being. Former investigator Daryl Parker.
She and James Hamilton did have a romantic relationship. They were living together at the time. And of course, when someone goes missing, typically the spouse or the significant other is the first person that law enforcement will look at. For one thing, they're the person who's most likely to know what was going on in that person's life. You know, were they depressed? Were they planning a trip? That kind of thing.
The word depressed caught James's attention. He told Lieutenant McClellan that Jennifer had been diagnosed with anxiety and depression.
Her mom died of brain cancer. When her mom died, she was actually out in California, and she felt a lot of remorse about not being, you know, here when her mother died.
Investigators were interested in Jennifer's state of mind around the time of her disappearance. They followed this lead with people close to her. Here again is her cousin, Susan.
She told me she was depressed because her mom had died, and she threw everything into her business. And when she threw everything into her business, then she let everything else go. And she said nothing made her happy. Her house, having a new house, redoing it, Rob, nothing. She got real depressed, I guess, in the fall, because she was always moping around, and she would always be like, I'm depressed, I don't want this business anymore. I would say, you know, Jennifer, you need to just get out of this funk mood and quit being depressed all the time. You have so many things to be happy about. And she would say, why, Susan? My mom died. I have a business, and I don't even take care of it. I don't want to get out of bed in the morning.
After hearing about Jennifer's troubles and subsequent mental health diagnosis, investigators wanted to explore the possibility that she had left of her own accord. Authorities paid a visit to Jennifer's house in Bonham, where she'd been living with her grandmother, Mimi. This is Jennifer's sister, Alyssa, describing the scene at the house.
She had her wedding book out. It was typically in a box, and the box had been opened. The wedding album was out, and Mimi said, yeah, she was looking at that. Her wedding video had been in the VCR, and I asked Mimi, and she said, yeah, she was watching that. And, I mean, I was kind of like, what is going on? I was kind of trying to be Nancy Drew in that house and was just wondering if I could find anything. But I knew I wouldn't find anything specific to her disappearance because I don't think she planned on disappearing.
You just wonder if there's anything that can help you understand her state of mind or...
Yeah. I mean, because to me, it's like if she had completely removed Rob from her life, she wouldn't even bring those things out. You know, once you're divorced and you move on, you don't bring out things and are sentimental. Right. So that just kind of made me think that she was trying to revisit her marriage and patch things up, or she was possibly trying to figure out where things went wrong or get that feeling back of when they were in love. And to me, that just put Rob in her life, and I did not know to what extent.
I know one of the other things that the police report mentioned was like prenatal vitamins. Was that something that you remember seeing?
Yes, I saw prenatal vitamins and I saw pregnancy tests.
The pregnancy tests were unused and created more questions than answers.
I just started going through, you know, kind of typical things that, unfortunately, I have to admit, you know, people go through when they want to know about someone's personal life. The cabinet, the medicine cabinet,
yeah,
and things like that. And that's where I found the prenatal pills. I found her unused medicine for depression that she refused to take, and a pregnancy test that I was just kind of amazed at because she had endometriosis and thought that she couldn't get pregnant. And so it kind of made my concerns and my intuition a little bit more concrete, that when she was there with me in Austin and she had these symptoms of fatigue and hunger and sleepiness, that I thought, oh my gosh, did she think she was pregnant or was she pregnant?
Yeah.
And I couldn't find her to ask her. I mean, I was just now finding this out.
That must have been pretty shocking on top of everything else. Your sister's missing, and now she might not only be missing, but missing and pregnant.
Yes, absolutely. I just felt like hit by a brick. And whether she's pregnant, if she's missing, and she's with a child, and I'm an aunt, and something happened to her, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
It was just a lot of confusion and ambiguity and just torture.
Gosh, yeah. And then, of course, you had to wonder, if she's pregnant, who's the father?
Yes, absolutely. I wanted to talk to her. I wanted to just say, hey, what's going on? Don't worry about it. We'll work it out. Yeah. We can always figure it out. Just, it's not anything that, you know, we can't deal with. Even though she was down in the dumps, I guess you would say, and depressed, she would never do anything to harm herself. And much less if she was carrying a child. And I know that she would have been the best mother ever. It might not be the best circumstances for her, but she would have definitely had support from the family and her friends. And I think she might have questioned initially, what would I do? You know, what are my options?
Sure.
What should I do? And I think when it came down to it, she would have the baby. My thought is that she would do everything she could to get back with the father if she was pregnant with their child.
As the police are starting to piece together their investigation down at the station, the Harris family circled the wagons at their own headquarters, Grandma Mimi's house.
It was really and truly just us trying to figure out what happened.
And so on that Tuesday, you know, it says that you get to your grandmother's house around 7 p.m. And then it says around 9:30 that Rob came by. Mm-hmm. I was curious, was he invited over or did he just show up?
No. he just showed up, and I hadn't seen him in over a year. So I thought it was just kind of strange, but, you know, he seemed really nervous and tense, but I didn't know if it was because it was an awkward situation, like we hadn't seen each other and they'd been divorced and stuff like that, or what. You know, I said, come in the house, and so he came in, and I could tell he felt really uncomfortable.
Alyssa would later write down her memories of her subsequent interactions with Rob and give them to police to include as part of the case file. From the starring role in a wedding video to an unexpected cameo in Mimi's living room, it seemed as though suspect number two had just re-entered the frame. Investigators begin to retrace Jennifer's steps on Mother's Day. They look into Jennifer's phone records from that day and see a familiar name, her ex-husband, Rob Holman.
Yeah, she's going to come out to mom and dad's to see my mom for Mother's Day. I told her that I didn't want her to, you know, it's my girlfriend out there, and I just don't like the situation there. And that was pretty much just the conversation.
But was there more to their conversation? On the next episode of Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris. What really happened on Mother's Day?
They did talk on the phone for approximately an hour.
I'll always love her, but it was just one of those lover that can't live with a person type of deal.
Jennifer told her grandmother that no one should be alone on Mother's Day.
Just before 8 p.m., Jennifer sort of said, oh my gosh, I got to go. I'm supposed to meet someone. Now, unfortunately for us, she didn't say who she was going to go meet.
she was still carrying on this thing with Rob behind James's back, which I knew, but I couldn't tell James.
Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One. This episode was written and reported by me, Claire Sanima, and Hillary Wadsworth. Audio production by Matthew Malinger of Podcast One. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Associate producer is April Scales. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of LucyMedia.com. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanima. Special thanks to Alyssa Harris-Warnick and Daryl Parker for talking to me for this episode. If you have any information about the unsolved murder of Jennifer Harris, contact the Fannin County Sheriff's Department at 903-583-2143.